what's going on, grandkids? Welcome to the asshole edition of Sun Granny Audio. Eric and Jeremy are here. Jeremy, how's it going, man?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Well, why don't you tell me why you're doing fine?
Just the usual. Life's good. And then when you get free tequila shots at the bar, that usually works pretty well, too.
I like how you explained to me off-air. You're like, the little waiter came around. I'm like, oh, you're at a Mexican restaurant, so you have to be a little
waiter. But we're recording this on an election day, and the topic of illegal immigration, which I can't say normally, so me stumbling on that has nothing to do with how much, I've been served today. I don't want to alienate the audience because I'm all for illegal immigration because it gives us Mexican restaurants.
And free tequila shots. Alien. Yeah.
Did I say aliens?
Oh, well, you said alienate.
Okay. Oh, I get it. Oh, no.
we're off to a rousing start.
Wow. I don't think it's fair to call them aliens. I mean, the definition's kind of changed. I mean, they're from this world, so.
You know what,
mean.
Though? All the semantics bullshit, like, there are TV commercials on right now for corn sugar. Like, they want to take high fructose corn syrup that everyone thinks is disgusting and tries to avoid. They want to rename it corn sugar. Corn sugar! Like a little pixie flew across the cornfield, sapped all the sugar out of it, and put it in your fat kid cereal. It's fucking corn syrup. It's fucking high fructose. It's all semantics.
Yeah.
All right? It's still a venereal disease. It's not an STI anymore. Okay?
But also, if you take the fructose out, don't you kind of take the fruit out of Mountain Dew? I mean, that's all
yeah,
it's
really.
Thing.
You take all the fun out of Hillbilly Holler. And you take all the fucking mountain out of Mountain Lightning. I don't know.
Well, no, I just realized I forgot to vote today. And then I quickly realized I wasn't going to vote anyways. So, I don't give a shit.
Yeah, I thought about it, but sadly, I'm turning into one of those people who's too busy at work and doing other things in real life to go out and vote.
Here, I thought you were going to make some profound statement. We're like, I just turned into one of those people. And I figured it was going to be followed by, the system doesn't work anyways. It's broken, blah, blah, blah. Some, like, long diatribe.
Yeah.
Probably, opinion and truth. Instead, I get, I'm just too busy with work.
Yeah, yeah. Instead, I got off work at 5 and went to the gym. I was too lazy to come.
The pool's open until 7 o'clock. I mean, how much exercise are you doing?
I
mean,
but
no. It doesn't matter either way.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Well,
exactly.
In this state,
the governor of Iowa.
In this state, the governor is between some twat that we don't know anything about and then some fucking wimpy guy that, I'm Vincent Sheehan. Or Sheehan, whatever his name is. And, like the chick at least, I think she's been taken, had like some photos with guns, like her holding guns. So you think, all right, this bitch knows how to like handle herself.
Yes.
And then you get Vincent Sheehan who's around the table praying before he eats his corn on the cob. I was like, you. And I know that's like the superficial thing, but, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a bag of shit or a plastic bag of shit. Oh, okay, great.
Nice. Our governor race was like 13 points difference. Everybody loves – okay, the story is nobody – in. What am I trying to say? For the last 50 years, no governor of Iowa has been voted out of office. It's been like one guy was there for 30 years and then – or 28 years and decided he didn't want to be there anymore. I don't know if I can get my math exactly right. And then the next governor was there for 4 terms, so 16 years, so whatever the other one was for. Fucking 16 and 34. That doesn't even work. It's not divisible by 4. But anyway, so this guy that we have right now, Chet Culver, he's a Democrat. He's never really
your
done
governor candidate. His name is Chet.
Chet. Yep.
Okay.
And somehow we're above the Mason-Dixon line. But anyway, he's
okay.
been in office for 4 years, and he's probably about to be voted out in favor of the last guy who was governor who graciously stepped aside. Oh, that doesn't count Tom Vilsack. I forgot about Vilsack. That's where my math is getting all messed up. The guy who recently said that whoever that black lady was working for the secretary of something or other was like, she doesn't know what she's talking about. And inferring that it was because of her race. And then he was like, there's the Iowa coming out of me. Well, I resign. Dipshit. So anyway, I figured the race is far enough, a big enough difference that my vote wasn't going to count.
No, your vote wouldn't count anyway. Even if you were the deciding vote, it wasn't going to count. It doesn't matter. Nothing changes. Not until we actually wise up, start polishing our guns up. And I don't mean shotguns or muskets or any of that bullshit. I'm talking helicopter guns like Jesse Ventura had in Predator.
Yeah.
So when they start like putting people in front of us, no, we mow them down like the goddamn jungle. It's that easy. So. And that's not even a tequila talking. If you look, if you think about it, and honestly, you know, and the political view, who was it? Was it Aaron Burr? Who was the president, or was the president's candidate? Back in the 1700s, they disagreed on something. They shot each other to settle the difference.
Yeah, Aaron Burr and what, John Adams?
Yeah, Aaron Burr, that's it. Yeah. That's what we should be doing now. Hey, all right, well, you know, we're deadlocking some. All right? You and you. Go get your little musket with your little, your awful little pistol with lit balls in it. Whoever doesn't die from it wins.
There you go. I like that.
That would scare some motherfuckers to vote. I mean, like, you know,
yeah.
These dummies we elect, at least get them to do something instead of just going, well, you know, talking out one side of the mouth, taking money from somebody else, and then telling us while they're all celebrating together how they're going to change shit. So,
that works for president, too, because now, politics aside, no offense to Obama, I voted for him, but then at least you'd have a commander-in-chief who's probably handled a gun before.
Yeah, well.
And then there's
if this was the East Coast audio, we could talk about Obama handling guns.
Yeah. Okay, then the president before him. The only place he's ever handled a gun is out on his daddy's farm.
Yeah. They're taking care of business or providing for his family.
Yeah.
We haven't mentioned the East Coast audio in a while. That was my, like, racist way of working in them, so, you know. we may actually want to talk about wrestling. We don't have to. I don't care. So,
there's plenty to talk about. Actually, this is, way, way off topic, but Dusty and I have done a show about music before. So just because you said, maybe we could talk about wrestling, made me think of that audio that Dusty and I did about music. And it made me think about, he asked me over IM the other day something about greatest albums of the 80s. We were talking about greatest sitcoms of the 80s first. Then we started talking about greatest albums of the 80s and how the 80s were a completely disposable decade. And I was racking my brain trying to think of one good full-length album from the 1980s because everything was singles back then, like it is now. And I went to, the quick end of the story. I went to Rolling Stone because obviously they tried their fucking top 100 list of bullshit all the time.
Yeah, their little elitist list of shit,
yeah. Yeah, and they're always wrong. And they're wrong for a very specific reason on this one. According to them, the number one greatest album from the 1980s was The Clash, London Calling. And don't get me wrong, it's got like 17 songs on it. I love like 10 of them. I like a few more. Some of them are filler. I don't think the album flows. I think it's just a collection of songs. The trick is the fucking album was released in 1979. And they have it as the number one greatest album of the 1980s.
Really? I thought it was 81.
It was 79,
really?
I think Sandinista came out in either 80 or 81.
Oh,
but
wow.
London Calling was 79.
Oh. Well, shit,
anyway.
It just kind of blew my mind, right? I mean, I honestly thought that was, I guess it was the start of, I hate saying this, but like New Wave.
Yeah.
Because I always remember, I've got one of the Dead Kennedys albums, there's a live track, and Jello Biafra was talking about how they've been dubbed New Wave to make it more easily accessible for the masses.
Right.
But I don't know, I'm trying to think. The Dead Kennedys album
the Dead Kennedys, they weren't going to be fucking palatable whether you called them goddamn New Wave or fucking Country Western.
Yeah.
I don't give
exactly.
a shit.
But I was going to say, in the 80s, like best albums, I'm trying to think, it's the one that has Let's Link the Landlord and Holiday in Cambodia on it.
Yeah,
I want to say that was 81 or 83, I think.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know. I know this is, like, totally still not topic, but I would – that's got to be up there because that started – I mean, without them, you don't get the – I mean, well, I almost said you don't get the outfield, but you don't – but
then,
without them
– Hold for Swank wouldn't have the greatest cover song ever if there wasn't an outfield.
But no, I mean, it does – it kind of – as goofy as it sounds, the punk bands are the ones that opened up for all those goofy new wave bands.
Yeah, like Blondie and Talking Heads and everybody.
Yeah, the one-hit wonders.
Yeah.
I mean, especially the one-hit wonders. Like, and I know Dusty's going to kill me. For like Big Country, they've got one of my favorite songs ever. Was A-ha. They were the ones that sang Take On Me, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But no, it, there's that weird progression where this... archaic, like anarchist punk music, if you want to put it that way.
Yeah.
The record companies got involved and took all the actual attitude and, like, I don't want to say craftsmanship, because that always sounds like such a dickish thing to say, but it took all of that out, and then you got A-ha and the outfield, and they turned Jefferson Airplane into Jefferson Starship, and then into Starship, and then. You get Tiffany and Debbie Gibson from it. It's all a weird progression.
It is. Everything's traceable back to everything. Everything's fucking traceable back to Elvis and everything from him, you know, Buddy Holly and fucking Sunhouse and goddamn Holly, you know. Everything has been stolen from one black dude that played a fucking homemade acoustic guitar on the muddy banks of Mississippi. But,
yeah.
No, that's exactly right. That's what mainstream does, is it co-opts the fringes and takes all the legitimate best parts of it and screw them up, and then takes all the parts and turns it into something that everyone wants to buy.
Yeah, I just imagine a couple years from now, there's going to be another band out there, and you're like, that sounds familiar. It's because they took a Hole for Swank song and took all the fun out of it. You like that? You like that?
Yeah. Hey, all right, name dropping.
All right, hang on, I'm turning the garage door, so there's going to be noise right there. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, there we go.
Well, good. That means you arrived home safely.
Yes, I arrived home safely.
Kids, don't drink and drive.
I don't care. I got home.
We were on the porch. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was just saying, you know, I drank and drove, and I got home just fine. So what's the problem?
That's right. No, I was going to say, back when we were on the torch, I freely admitted to drinking and driving on a regular basis, and I think we were like, feuding with the people that actually worked on the site, and I was just thinking, great, one of these days, Bruce Mitchell is going to call the Cedar Falls, Iowa Police Department and be like, hey, you know, keep an eye out, you know, for, you know, somebody drinking and driving, you know, but but then here you are actually doing it on the air. I applaud you. It's like Brian Kendrick and Paul London smoking weed on that shoot interview.
Or Zach Galifianakis lighting up a joint on Real Time with Bill Maher.
Yes.
Friday. Although I think that was just all staged, obviously, but, you know, whatever.
Yeah,
I used to really like Zach Galifianakis, and then it sounds like he's starting to get a little too full of himself. So,
well,
like,
you get mainstream now, too.
Yeah. It's just weird to see, like, a comedian losing his, like, sense of humor and becoming, like, really self-absorbed. It's just weird. I mean, I guess Pryor did that to a certain extent.
Yeah.
But that was also back when he was doing cocaine like a fiend and, you know, before he started getting his successes. So.
Well, you know what? That's just it. Like, that Galifianakis has been hilarious for a long time and no one's known it. It wouldn't surprise me if he's like, you know what? Fucking finally, it's about time somebody realizes I'm funny. And just decided to be a dick about it.
Yeah, I remember when Dustin and I went and saw him when we went to Detroit.
Yeah, and Lee Pack and I went to the Ring of Honor show.
Mm-hmm. And Kevin went and watched hockey. That was like the weirdest vacation. Like the whole crew went their separate ways, even though we only see each other like once every other year.
Right.
So.
And then Lee Pack comes back and he's like, "You guys have got your funny bones tickle pink."
That's right. I forgot about that. A dickhead.
Oh, fuck. Well, hey, at least we're bringing it back around to wrestling. Should we start talking about Monday Night Raw?
We can, or do you want to, like, it's getting to that point. Do you want to talk about the good or the bad first?
Right, well,
well, that's a good question
know.
Because
or,
we're kind of
or the
right
bad
now.
Or the worst first.
Right. Now, do we strike while the iron's hot and we're both on fire and yelling and screaming about stuff and keep talking about the bad, or do we put a lull in the action here and talk about the iffy and then try to end on a loud note?
I don't know. We usually go too long anyway, so I figure people like can't sit through these entire things. So I'm almost wondering we should just start with on fire and then peter out. That way, when they shut it off, they're like, oh yeah, we didn't really miss anything.
There you go. Good call. Well, the main reason that we wanted to do this show anyway tonight is because you and I got to talking about TNA Anonymous. That's the handle of somebody on Twitter. I'll try to give a little bit better background, and if you had need to fill in any holes, let me know. But for a few months now, somebody has been posting on Twitter under the handle TNA Anonymous. They claim to be a wrestler within the company. They claim their contract just ran out a couple of weeks ago, and they're working on a week-to-week contract or something like that. But they've been on Twitter just bashing TNA management and bashing the old wrestlers like Hulk Hogan and Ric Flair and Mick Foley who are taking up precious TV time and bashing, I don't know, and calling out Eric Bischoff and Vince Russo and people like that. Anything else in the context that I'm missing?
Well, okay, when it came to the contract, he said that he, among others, contract has come up. So, and he's been working without a deal, but working the taping.
Yeah.
So, it made me think, I don't know, I'm sure this is exactly what they were going for, trying to drum up interest in themselves, to try and sell
mm-hmm.
themselves, if you will. It makes me think it's somebody who, I don't know, they're not an active part, but they should be. But then, I mean, one of the other parts that he hasn't really called out Eric Bischoff at all, or Bischoff at all. He's actually gone out of his way saying the problem isn't Hogan and Bischoff.
Okay,
there was one tweet where he said the product looks better because of Eric Bischoff.
That's true. He has actually said that the quality of the show, there's been an attempt to better the quality of the show. And I guess the
right.
two people that he's more specifically called out are Dixie Carter and Tommy Dreamer. He's actually made a few
yeah.
tweets where he's specifically put Tommy Dreamer in there in the hopes that it would show up on Dreamer's wall and that he would pay attention to it.
yeah, that was the one that kind of gave me like that puzzled, like, really? I mean, so I guess from that it makes me wonder, how much power does Tommy Dreamer have all of a sudden?
Well, what it makes me wonder is, why doesn't the person just spell out in ketchup their tweet on 140 hamburgers so Tommy Dreamer will see it that way? And he can fucking eat it like a Pac-Man game until he figures out what's
until he gets the power nugget of truth at the end
yeah.
and it all becomes clear to him.
Yeah, that's a good point. Exactly what kind of power does Tommy Dreamer wield? It's like, where the fuck did he come from? And since when does he have such great ideas to impart?
Yeah, and wasn't the TNA reunion, the ECW, that promotion from Philadelphia's like reunion show.
Uh-huh.
Wasn't that booked by him and everyone thought it was the most horrible shit?
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
Even like the match quality. So to me, it's like, well, wait a second. Why does this guy have any sort of power if what he's done has just been just total shit? So,
right,
and then that goes to the Dixie Carter thing. So,
yeah, like what the fuck statistics and metrics is Dixie Carter looking at to rationalize Dreamer still having any power? And he must, if this TNA Anonymous is calling him out. I mean, let's just go into the assumption that this is actually a TNA wrestler that actually is trying to make a difference from within the company and it's just falling on deaf ears. Then we can take at face value the fact that Tommy Dreamer must have some pull. Man, it's obviously not a fucking pull up.
Yeah. Well, you can do a pull-out to the buffet, get it? Old joke. But No, and I guess that was my way of commenting on how the blog for a while just turned into, like, making fun of how fat and stupid, like, three individuals were. Mick Foley, Matt Hardy, and then Tommy Dreamer, for the most part. I mean, even that, what was my post about that? Oh, Val Venus? I just put it at the end of it. Oh, and Matt Hardy's still fat.
Yeah, that's classic.
it's just unnecessary. But I like how we've gone from writing for a mass audience to writing for, like, the four of us.
Yeah, basically.
It's only jokes that make us laugh or that we get.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there's got to be people out there going, what does this even mean? But...
Well, read the fucking back post. That's why there are archives on the front page.
Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I mean, that was kind of on purpose to round up for how that's how TNA writes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was bitching to Kevin. I mean, I was, you know, pretty busy, but at work. But that, watching Impact was like watching a fucking PSA. I'm like, well, you know, I'm a card-carrying member of the Mensa. I don't remember what it was. I don't care what it was.
Uh-huh.
I don't care if these guys are getting concussions. That's not my problem.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I know that sounds harsh, but, you know, you don't give a crackhead a chair and go, hey, hit this guy in the back with it. And then he hits the guy in the back of the head with it.
Yeah, no
shit. What do you think's going to happen?
I know what's going to happen. They're going to give that crackhead the world championship.
Yeah.
And then he's going to paint his face and put on a suit and make some fucking paraplegic's day on a women's
talk. The paraplegic did nothing wrong. But the way you said it, if you put the onus on the paralyzed person, he's like, well, yeah, he's going to have to go and put a suit on and make some quadriplegic stay. Well, wait a minute. The person who can't move any of their limbs didn't do anything wrong. So you can't put the onus on the poor piece of meat on two wheels. That's not fair.
The best part is that the kid only had, like, one arm in a sling because he got beat up.
Stop. This kid didn't do anything wrong.
Yeah,
this
he
is what we do.
Watches TNA on a regular basis.
This is why we can't do a show together. This is why. For 2 months. Oh, god damn.
You bring out the worst in me, Jeremy Page.
The poor kid blows in a straw, and it happens to come out Jeff Hardy.
Oh, well, hey, even
oh
he
my
got
God.
Fucking Mike Adamly couldn't. Fucking Christopher Reeve Jr. did. Oh, shit. Did I lose you?
Oh, God. I love how this goes with the two of us. We start off attacking someone that, you know, a TNA innocuous, and then we go to, like, a real person, Dixie Carter, and then we go to some poor, paralyzed person who's done nothing wrong other than wanting to meet Jeff Hardy, because they don't care that he does drugs or that he's, you know, or allegedly, whatever, or that he's, like, in the middle of a trafficking, you know, offense, and he's on federal, is it federal charges, or? Something like that. He doesn't care.
I don't remember. No.
He wants 30 seconds of the rest of his miserable life to be happy. And we've just destroyed. I mean,
he just wants Jeff Hardy to sign his helmet so he can go on with it.
God damn it.
Yeah.
This is one I'm actually going to listen back, and I'm not going to feel good about this part of the show.
No, probably not me either.
So you guys better fucking download this one fast, and that's going to be the teaser trailer for it. You better download this one fast before we come to our senses and take this thing down immediately.
Yeah, this is going to be the one of the ones that we take down to save room on the server.
Which we need to do.
Yeah, no shit. I know. I'm almost out of room.
Yeah. All right. So.
So TNA Anonymous.
Yeah. Okay. That was it.
And they've been he's been dropping what look like clues or hints for a while now, saying things like I've been giving my and he writes longer than 140 characters, so it ends up on twitlong.com or whatever it's called. And he says things like I've been trying to give my advice for the last 4 years, but it's gone unnoticed. This isn't really so much a dropped hint, but I noticed the way he spelled capitalizing today. He spelled it with an S instead of a Z, which is the European way of spelling it.
Yeah.
Things like that I tried to pick up on, and the first person I thought of, I don't know if it's time now to stop dissecting posts or if we can continue doing that while we guess, but the first person I thought of was Doug Williams, being European. He hasn't quite been there for 4 years, but he's been there for a while, and he did some World X Cup stuff.
Yeah.
I could see him as a guy who would go to bat for the younger guys. He's 38 years old himself. He's still relatively new in the United States, but, you know, and then he said something about having an opportunity to teach at a wrestling school. I wouldn't put it past somebody to hire Doug Williams to be a teacher. Anyway, that's just one of my thoughts.
Yeah.
You mentioned somebody, and I was curious.
I agree with that one, too.
So, you mentioned Hernandez earlier, but I wasn't sure why.
No, we're not going there.
You've already.
I remember your immediate response when I said that. So, the only reason I said Hernandez, first, where has he been? They had him built up as being this huge star, and then they loan him to Mexico and get rid of him.
Right.
They've gotten rid of Homicide, who was an X-Division wrestler when, you know, they weren't in LAX, which they broke up for no reason. And it just seemed with LAX, it was always a distraction. They brought in Hector Guerrero, and then they brought in Salinas. Just really, if there was someone that had an axe to grind, someone who should have been pushed to the top, and looked like it was going there until Hogan and Bischoff came in, really.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, there was a neck injury thing that really hurt his chances, too, but there was a lot. I mean, he seemed to be destined to be the guy that broke out. Remember, we used to talk about how if his contract comes up, he has to go to WWE. He's got to get out of there.
Yes.
And I think he actually re-signed, though, a year or so ago. So, but I don't remember what terms were.
Right.
So, and honestly, this guy could just be saying, or this person could just be saying, hey, you know, I'm working on a contract, knowing damn well they've got one. And, you know, I mean, if you're going to be doing this sort of thing, because this is actually a really, if this is real, which is another thing I want to bring up later.
Yeah.
If this is a real thing, this is a potential career killer, because, I mean, regardless of what WWE wants to say, if there's no way they're going to hire a guy who's going to, you know, sign up for a different Twitter account, blast all this stuff all over the place. And the internet, you know, I don't consider us to be one of them because we're so small, but like the internet, dirt sheet, message boards, all that sort of stuff, those do, I mean, they do read them. They do look at them.
Oh, they do,
I mean, it's been evidenced for a long time that they look at this stuff.
Jim Ross in his blog almost every single time specifically mentions something that shows up on the internet. You know that at least he reads it, and I'm sure tons of other people do. Those comic book nerds, they have writing for them, too.
JBL would, like, comment about Torch articles. I know McDivitt used to send stuff to Wade, you know, about corrections. So they clearly, if you want to put it, police them, look over them, that sort of thing.
Yep.
So, it's a real potential. So, and I know when you said the capitalizing with an S, to me that just seemed like to be too much of a dead giveaway, you know? But when you said that, that also made me think this is actually something that is going to turn out to be a gimmick on TNA, on TV. Just waiting
well
for that.
with Hogan
yeah.
coming out with his little twit video that said, we're going to start shooting, brother.
Yeah. We're going to keep wanting to do it real now. And it would also explain the ass-kissing for Hogan and Bischoff, too.
That's true.
But no, I'm just waiting for, like, the little subtle hint that TNA will give, like, you know, this is anonymous, or, you know, this is TNA, it's not some anonymous source, or, you know, some not-so-subtle shit they usually do.
Something sly that he old fucking owl face tries to drop in there.
Yeah. But it's caused me to have, like, a great, like, an actual need to check Twitter, though. So it's had its desired effect. I want to see what this person is going to write next. So.
Yeah. Well, yeah, one of three things is going to happen. It's either going to turn out to be a work, and it's all going to blow over, and somehow Vince Russo is going to fuck it up. It's going to turn out to be legit, and this guy is going to burn every bridge that he's got in wrestling. I mean, this is like Tom Zank. Even all the way to like somebody like Aloysia from NXT, you know. You can't be given interviews before you're officially released without permission from WWE. Or Paul London, Brian Kendrick, just people that are choosing to talk out of turn until they're totally blacklisted. Like, I'm surprised.
Right.
You know, apparently Shane Douglas didn't piss everybody off because he's got a, you know, an off, on-again, off-again thing with TNA, but here's a guy who can't keep his mouth shut either. You know,
yeah,
there are only so many places you can make money in professional wrestling. You got to watch your mouth. And don't get me wrong, I'm intrigued. Fuck, TNA Anonymous on Twitter is literally the most interesting thing about TNA right now and is the primary reason we're even bothering to talk about that piece of shit company on this audio.
Besides the other thing, but
I don't know. Another person I thought of, and this is a real stretch because he's actually had a good career, relatively speaking, for TNA. And timeline-wise, with that whole 4 years thing, which I'm starting to think is just like a stretch, it doesn't quite work out. For some reason, I was thinking, or I wondered if Matt Morgan, if his contract was about to run out. Because here's another guy who's got, you know, I'm like slowly getting on his bandwagon because he's turning out to be a better actor, which is making him a better talker. And all the work that he's done with everyone he's worked with has slowed him down in the ring, which is good. But I also look at him as kind of a brainiac who might have a ton of ideas. And if no one's going to pay attention to him, then he realizes he can go be a star somewhere else, including possible movies or TV. He's got that on the horizon for him, too.
But he's another guy, though, I think that re-signed recently, like in the last year or two. So unless they're doing small
contracts for these guys, which would be another, you know, problem point for them.
Yeah.
But you mentioned Samoa Joe, too, right, earlier?
Yeah, the perpetually frustrated, upset, Samoa Joe, whenever some management does something he doesn't like, tries to go fuck a 14-year-old boy and gets caught by cameras, then Joe turns to the internet and starts griping, complaining about everything. And rightfully so. But, you know, he's an internet-savvy, potentially frustrated professional wrestler who could make a living doing a lot of other things right now. If he had to drop everything in TNA, he could do a lot of things and still be okay, including run a wrestling school or whatever. So that was another name that I thought of.
Yeah.
Mostly
because
of the
way he's been treated, too. So.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. This on again, off again, nation of violence, paint half your face, carry a fucking knife bullshit.
Yeah. And which is the one that's actually a lawnmower blade.
And now being made to look like a fucking idiot in light of all of this stuff.
Yeah. And I'm sorry if I'm distracted, but Terror Train is on right now. So. if you've never seen it, you must watch it.
What is it called?
Terror Train.
This is
when Jamie Lee Curtis was making all of her slasher movies.
Okay.
This thing is just shit. It's a horrible movie, and I'm just so happy it's on. I'm going to record it later.
Is it on a train?
Yeah, a slasher invades a train and starts killing people.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, it's like Murder on the Orient Express, but not as nearly as interesting.
Okay. There was another movie, and I'll be damned if I can remember everyone in it, but I know William Shatner was in it. and it was like late 70s, a movie about a train that somebody took over and was going to run it into another train. And it's terrible. It's like, you know how the old, back in the day, TV stations on Sunday afternoons used to have the $1 million movie, such and such.
Yeah, I don't remember.
This is one of those movies that I always call, because The Simpsons already made this joke, I always call it a $1,000 movie. but I saw the fucking commercials for the new Denzel Washington movie with the runaway train.
Yes, Unstoppable.
And I'm like, Unstoppable. And I'm like, are they seriously remaking that piece of shit William Shatner movie that I just saw on Channel 20 the other day?
Yeah, it's got Denzel in it, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Captain Kirk. But the new Captain Kirk, I mean. So
he's Inside Man.
Yeah. Ugh. That was not bad of a movie, actually.
So, I like it.
I lost a lot of shit lately, so. Ugh.
Oh.
But, yeah, I think okay, I think that means we're done with TNA, and I don't know if we've quickly forgotten we were even talking about it that fast.
No. We're not done with TNA, because the other topic, and this has to do a little bit with Doug Williams, a little bit with Matt Morgan.
And
the way that they've been treated. This is another clue left by TNA Anonymous. Something to the effect of, in a competent company far, far away, being endorsed by Ric Flair used to mean something.
Mm-hmm.
And that was actually another reason I thought of Matt Morgan, but also I'm staying on the Doug Williams thing. TNA has been trying this faction warfare like Vince Russo has tried to do for years and years, ever since the Nation of Domination, Barrique, DOA, horseshit, Heart Foundation, up until today, and now he's got They and the Immortals and the fucking EV2, and now he's got this faction called Fortune, and it's Ric Flair and about 17 other guys holding up four fingers but bending down the ring finger and holding up the thumb, because apparently that's how you shock women these days.
Well, who was it, Dusty that pointed out, or was it you that pointed out, somebody mentioned Fortune's got seven or eight guys in the ring and they're all holding up four fingers?
Yeah,
you're trying to figure
Dusty
out what the hell's going on.
Yep, that was Dusty.
He
has his beef with Fortune too.
Yeah, it. Okay,
and,
I don't want to interrupt that.
Well, okay, so just continuing on the thought. So multiple guys, Fortune, and I don't remember what the next pay per view is. If it's Turning Point or
whatever.
But yeah, the next pay per view, or at least one of the upcoming pay-per-views, a poster was recently released for it. And assuming it's real, it's like a fake dollar bill or fake, you know, like iconography from a dollar bill in the background.
Mm-hmm.
And then the members of Fortune on the poster. And it's Flair up front and center with AJ Styles, Kazarian, Robert Roode, and James Storm. Now, the last time I paid any attention to TNA, Matt Morgan was being courted by them, and Douglas Williams was a member of them. Nigel McGuinness wanted to be in there, and then he didn't want to be in there, but he didn't want to. So, apparently they settled on these four guys plus Flair, minus Douglas Williams, minus Matt Morgan. And just us talking about that got me thinking, okay, it got me thinking, I wonder if one of those guys is TNA Anonymous. And according to IM chat earlier, it got you thinking, Fortune is the worst faction in wrestling history.
No, that's been a thought. I've just, like I said, it's been a busy few weeks, so I haven't had a chance to write or get on audio.
Mm-hmm.
But Fortune is the worst faction ever. I mean, they're the worst. I mean, Kevin and I have gone back and forth on this. I mean, he doesn't disagree. But they formed, and, it, you know, it was Fear Money, AJ Styles, and Kazarian. It was like, okay, give or take Kazarian, whatever. But that made sense, okay? And then you had Ric Flair and the J.J. Dillon role, and you're like, wow, Fear Money has the tag champs, Kazarian gets the X Division or TNA TV title, whatever it is, and then Styles, you know, is the heavyweight champ. And you've got yourself a decent four horsemen run,
which is what they're always going for.
Right.
Well, then they add Morgan and Doug Williams out of the blue for no reason.
Yes.
Okay. Oh, I mean, I guess it's got to make sense because, you know, Flair's the best technical wrestler and Doug Williams, and then he went out and hired Muscle or Protection or something. You're like, okay, that's all right. The very same show. Beer Money loses, Doug Williams loses, Matt Morgan loses.
Yep.
And you're like, well, that never happened to the Four Horsemen.
Hey, the same thing happened when they were looking at Desmond Wolfe. Desmond Wolfe lost his match, too.
Yeah. They never win.
No.
They never win. AJ Styles wins matches. But he is also, I mean, if you really think about it, he's fighting Tommy Dreamer, who in the eyes of the audience is just that fat guy from ECW.
Right.
He shouldn't, I mean, he shouldn't hang with AJ Styles at all. So, I mean, maybe that's supposed to build up the underdog sentiment, but of course not, because it's just like, this is ridiculous.
Yep.
But then they get a faction, then they join up with another faction. All the while, they never win any of their matches. They go and beat down guys, but there's no heat to it. It's just they beat guys down. Then they lose matches right over again, just showing, you know, they're not good. They're not the elite. I think the most telling part to me was when I brought up the Dungeon of Doom, which, you know, could possibly be the worst faction ever.
Yeah.
But they won matches. And they weren't squash matches. They would win. They would have an impact. And you could make fun of the Yeti all you want because it was ridiculous. At least that damn thing headlined, I mean, you know, that angle was at the top of a pay-per-view.
Yeah.
And people still think about it. The only reason I even, like, think of Fortune is how fucking stupid and awful they are. They come out and, I remember there was one part where Kazarian was talking about how they were the best in the world. We're not six punk rookies or something. Just, you know, I can't remember the exact wording. You know, we get ratings, and I'm like, no, you fucking don't.
No,
Nexus,
you don't.
Yeah, Nexus immediately spiked Raw's ratings.
Yeah,
when they
and, oh, and they win matches, too.
Yeah, and they win a lot of matches, too. And I mean, they've got tag team champions. I mean, you know, whatever. But so to me, I mean, I remember talking about this with Kevin. It came off as Bush League to me to bring it up and go, we are equal ratings when you don't have anything to back it up. And then when you go and have your matches, you lose. Now, you do, if you're Kazarian, you do win because you get to go home to Tits McGillicuddy. So, okay, you win that. You win that argument. That's fine. But they're the worst. I mean, I would put up Drawing Power. I would seriously put up the Dungeon of Doom. And I keep going back to them because they're terrible.
Yep.
They are more marketable and more interesting and more dominant, if you want to put it that way. And that's with the Booty Man or the Zodiac or whatever his fucking name was.
Yeah, the old Zodiac, yes, no.
Yeah.
Ooh. Yep, I guarantee you, if the pay-per-view, if it's Turning Point or whatever it is with Fortune on the poster, if they all teamed up, they could all, four of them team up. They could have Ric Flair as a fucking special fifth partner.
Mm-hmm.
And they could wrestle pick any other four or five guys in the company and all of TNA, put them together in a, hold on one second, I have to ignore this. Put them together in a, put them together in a fucking cage match, a War Games, I don't care what, in the fucking most special occasion match TNA has. It will not equal the ratings, the buy rate, that the Dungeon of Doom did against Hogan and his faction in September 95 at Fall Brawl WCW.
Was that the one with him and Savage having to fight them all?
It was, no, that was Uncensored 96. This was,
yeah,
I think, Hogan, Savage, Sting, and Luger, and Luger had to come in and take Vader's place because Vader had just gotten fired.
That's right,
but they fought Kamala and Brutus and fucking two others. I don't remember if Kevin Sullivan actually wrestled or not, and I know Dusty's going to remember. I want to say Avalanche was one of them, or Shark, or whatever he was going by at the time.
Yeah,
A guy called the Shark, yes.
Yeah. I guarantee you that pay-per-view headlined by the Dungeon of Doom did a better buy rate than a pay-per-view that will be headlined by Fortune.
I guarantee
there
if
you
put that ass on now, it would do better ratings than watching a Fortune segment.
Awesome. And fucking Shark is dead.
Yeah. So, well, yeah, all right, that's not fair. Then people are like, aw, I'll watch the Shark match. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, good point.
No. No, but the Fortune doesn't make any sense as well. There's no cohesion of the group. You've got AJ Styles as a TV champ. Okay, that'd be like the Four Horsemen forming around Tully Blanchard.
Yeah.
Because he was a TV champ, or, you know, I know Arn was for a long time, but, you know, Tully was a TV champ or the U.S. champ.
U.S., yeah.
Yeah. So, the entire idea of a faction is to consolidate power.
Yep.
So, the first thing they do is they sell out and join up with Bischoff and Hogan.
Right.
And their storyline. So, they're just bitches then for somebody else. The Four Horsemen and the NWO, if you want to bring them into it, they didn't bow down to anybody. They were their own people.
Right.
So, and I know this is like digging deep or being nitpicky, but when you saw the Horsemen, you were like, those are some bad fuckers. I mean, you believed everything that was going on.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, even like the Nation of Domination, the NOD, yeah. The NOD, you saw them, and you were like, you know, those four guys, well, it was a bigger group at that time, but when it became the all-black version with Ron Simmons and Rock and D'Lo and Mark Henry.
Yeah, bigger nation, a blacker nation, yeah.
Yeah, God, that was a great, that was such a great group, too.
Yeah.
You believed it. Well, you see Fortune, and you're just like, all right.
Yeah, who the fuck is Kazarian ever going to beat?
That's my, yeah. I don't mind Doug Williams as a wrestler. He doesn't fit. Kazarian doesn't fit. So if you had AJ as the Ric Flair role, but as AJ Styles, not AJ Styles trying to be a Ric Flair.
No.
Then you had Matt Morgan in the Barry Windham, Lex Luger position.
Yep.
And then you have your beer money.
Yeah, it's that simple.
I mean,
and then have them win. And the other thing is, too.
All the time.
And then of all the other things you mentioned, factions being a combination of power, factions being successful when they hold championships. That's why this whole, like, segmented TNA thing where everybody's in a big group and everyone's got a name, it just doesn't work. Because everybody ends up looking like a jobber if they're, like, combining their forces and can't win shit. That's why the Barriquas and DOA didn't work. And that's why whenever you've got a company that's broken up into all of these different factions, it never works. When it was the NWA and it was the Four Horsemen, if anybody else ever got together, it was for a very limited amount of time. You know, it's not like you don't immediately think of Dusty Rhodes, Magnum TA, and the Road Warriors. You know, those weren't like, that wasn't four guys. What am I trying to say? They weren't four guys with like a stable name with a common goal like the Horsemen were that revolved around the world championship sort of thing. Mm-hmm. You had one faction, and that's why it was successful. You can't give a belt to everybody in your company and thus making every faction look like they've, you know, served their purpose. You do it.
Yeah.
You pick four guys, put them together, that's it.
Yeah, and I just wonder what legit heat would actually be on a group that, like, if AJ Styles was the champion, and every time, you know, just do, let history repeat itself. Let him do the Ric Flair thing where it's like, you got a year of build-up. He finally loses it, and everyone pays to see him lose finally. But, you know, that's just one of those things. And I don't know if TNA has an audience to sustain that. I mean, they certainly don't have the patience for it. My other problem with Fortune is, well, there's two more. They always talk about the legend, Ric Flair, and he's supposed to be the James Day Dillon role or the Farouk role or the Hogan / Bischoff role for the NWO. DX doesn't work because they were, you know, doing the goofball thing. But
like Bret Hart when it came to the Bigger Heart Foundation.
Yeah. When there was a bigger Hart Foundation, you didn't fuck with him. He was undisputed leader. You know what he said. Well, you got Fortune, and they're icing their leader.
Right, that's fucked up.
And you know, it was funny because Kevin was like, I don't even know what that was, and someone went to Brian Spatcher party. It's not that big of a thing that people are like, what are they? Oh, that's really,
you know, that's cool and hip and all that.
But at the same time, you're doing that to the guy who leads the group.
Right. That's
so
yeah.
So he should
be
like,
more,
what are you doing?
Vince Russo just doesn't get it. Like, he will cut everybody's legs out from underneath him just so he can say that he went through the fucking arduous process of writing a script that involves cutting everybody's legs out from under him.
Yeah.
I slaved over my TV. I slaved over a fucking hot episode of Jerry Springer for 8 hours a day. I swear to God, Wade, writing this shitty fucking TV that fucking nobody likes because it's fucking stupid and terrible and has no logic.
Yeah.
It takes a lot of effort to pair up AJ Styles and Kazarian at fucking 8:01, and then at 8:02 they fucking beat each other. Real, real smart TV.
Yeah.
There's a reason fucking celebrating a 1-5 over a 1-1-4 the previous week.
Yeah. And then I don't even want to get into that conversation. but it would be, like, if there was, like, someone leading Stunt Granny, which probably wouldn't be a bad idea, an outside person leading. And they're like, yeah, this is what we're going to help you out. We're going to do this for you. We're going to give you direction. We're going to give you money. We're going to publicity, you know, all this stuff. And then Kevin goes, bah, and like, Ice is the guy.
Right.
He just, or girl. And she's like, what? Now she's the, you know, one of those girls. And she bites down. But you know, in a business sense, they just look at you and go, what the fuck are you thinking?
Exactly.
I'm the one that plans everything. I'm the leader of this thing. And he should just be like throwing it back at him, going, we're not here for kick games.
That's right.
Now, I mean, off camera, it's hard to portray off camera happening, but
right. I don't even know. And you know what? This is a weird thought. I know we've talked about this. Every combination of us for Stunt Granny has talked about this whole backstage skit thing all the time. For some reason, I just imagine, like, what would have happened in, like, late 89, early 1990 if on Superstars of Wrestling, Vince McMahon would have been like, coming up next, Hacksaw Duggan versus Jim Powers. Wait, what? There's something going on in the back. And fucking, like, Earthquake is sitting on top of Jimmy Hart while Dino Bravo laughs in the background. You didn't see shit like that because you didn't fucking need it.
That's perfect. Yes.
Fucking little tiny Jimmy Hart's arms and legs flailing around with his sunglasses on while Earthquake sits on him laughing and fucking Dino Bravo says something in French. You fucking didn't get that back then because professional wrestling doesn't need all this horse shit.
Yeah.
And we don't need icing, and it fucking flies in the face of logic anyway. You're exactly right. We all know in real life fucking Ric Flair's hard up for money. He probably fucking collects those empty Smirnoff bottles and catches them in to pay his alimony.
He makes sure he's in Rhode Island and Michigan so he can catch it.
But in fucking the context of professional wrestling, you're exactly right. That's bullshit.
Although that would be a great skit, having Ric Flair and, like, Kazarian, like Newman and Kramer trying to travel with all the empty cans across state lines to catch them
in the mail truck.
My other problem with Faction is they've already broken up with one of the members.
Yeah.
Or Fortune. I keep getting Fortune and Faction mixed up, but Matt Morgan already quit, essentially.
Right.
I know the Four Horsemen went through members, but not after, like, 2 months.
Right.
I mean, good grief. Yeah,
it's been 3 years. I think it took two years for Ole to be replaced by Lex Luger, not 2 months.
Yeah.
And this is Matt Morgan, the guy who's basically been begging to be a part of a faction since the beginning. Christ, he fucking practically crawled over broken glass just for Main Event Mafia to look at him twice.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
Yeah, this is TNA. This is how TNA operates. Fucking Samoa Joe looks like a dope every 3 months, and Matt Morgan tries to join every single faction in the company.
Yeah.
They're two perfect candidates for TNA Anonymous. I'm just saying.
I've run out of steam with them. I think I finally got off my chest, but...
Okay.
They're just the worst.
Yeah. Well, that's good because we're coming up on an hour. Do you even want to attempt to talk about Monday Night Raw?
Well, let's talk... All right. The only thing I really found interesting, this is what I was talking about to Kevin with him. Maybe I should save that part, but...
Well, do you want me to lead in with my original thought from off-air?
Yeah, I think that works. That's good.
Well, off-air, I asked Jeremy, I'm like, what are we going to talk about when it comes to Raw? I said, we don't want to belabor it because everyone watches it and everyone already knows what happened. And I said, and Jeremy, you said, do you want to, how did you say that? Talk about the things that sucked or the things that sucked less or something like that.
Yeah. That's pretty much how Raw was.
Yeah,
no, you said that there were four things or something like that.
Yeah, well, I was like, well, we could talk about the things that sucked or the things that should have sucked but didn't or the things that totally didn't suck and were at least a little bit entertaining. And I said, really, all that does is whittle it down to four people, Triple H, Pee Wee Herman, Daniel Bryan, and The Miz.
The Pee Wee Herman part still cracks me off. The placement... It's just a well-constructed joke, so.
Thank you. Somehow that summarizes Monday Night Raw in a nutshell.
Yeah.
Isn't that pathetic?
All right. So let's start with number one, which I forgot already. Daniel Bryan was number one?
Triple H was number one on the list.
Okay. And I told Kevin the same thing. Maybe there's something wrong with me. Maybe I was just tired this morning. I watched the Raw, the end of Raw this morning.
Mm-hmm.
I got a kick out of a Vince McMahon and Stephanie McMahon / Triple H sketch.
I did too. I admit it.
I don't know why it was funny, because it was childish. I think part of it was the uncomfortableness. Whatever word. I don't know. They didn't even bother to disguise Freddie Prinze Jr. They were like, this loser actor, no one cares.
You could hear a needle fart.
Yeah. And I said, yeah, no one cares about poor Fred from Scooby-Doo. I think it was Summer Catch. It was him and Matthew Lillard.
Oh, God. I don't even remember.
Yeah, and it was a baseball movie. Those are the only two movies I can think of him in.
Oh, yeah, with Jessica Biel. Yep, okay.
Yeah, and that's honestly the only movies I can think of him in.
Uh-huh.
I think he was in one with his wife, because that wasn't Scooby-Doo.
But
then McMahon, you know, they haven't really acknowledged McMahon at all. And I think part of it was the obviousness of the joke. Like, when you're like, wow, Steven spent like $50 million of real money. And
yep.
You're like, wait a sec. And then all of a sudden, beep, 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 starts blinking and it starts going off. You're like, oh, okay, here it comes.
Yep. Oh, so,
but,
sorry, my dishwasher's really steamy right now.
And Kevin thought it was kind of cool that he mentioned Daniel Bryan because he apparently must like him.
Uh-huh.
What did you think of him going, the next thing you're going to tell me is Daniel Bryan's the United States champion?
Oh, and what did I think of that?
Yeah.
I thought it was funny that he even got a mention.
Okay. I mean, you know how everyone likes to go, well, there's more into that than there actually is. And
right.
I don't know. It kind of, because McMahon always presented himself as the alpha male and the cool guy.
Yeah.
So to me, it still fit the character because he was like, you're going to tell me that this nerd is the United States champion? Which is funny because Daniel Bryan, when he went into a coma, wasn't in WWE at the time.
Oh, yeah, good point. Well, no, was he?
No, he got
choked out. Yeah, you're right. Okay.
Yeah, he had been, NXT was over.
Yep.
And, oh, no, he was one of the guys that attacked Cena, and then he was gone the next week because... choking Justin Roberts with his own tie.
Yep.
So
So, yeah, so there was no, he wasn't there, so really he shouldn't have known.
Right.
And then there was the whole, you know, the Linda McMahon bumper stickers and, you know, I'm going to run for president, which I thought was pretty funny.
That was okay. The Blumenthal sticker over the ass. Like, as soon as he said, oh, I got to go to the bathroom, I'm like, oh, great.
Yeah.
Toilet humor from McMahon. But then it redeemed itself.
Yeah.
You know, the skit ended, and then it redeemed itself.
Yeah. And then the other funny part, it wasn't Stephanie McMahon. It was like her waking up on it.
Right.
It was Triple H just blowing off the fact that her dad is brain dead.
Yeah. How
if
odd.
Is my dad still in a coma? He's like, yeah, she's still in a coma. He's pretty much brain dead.
Yep.
Just like, fuck him, he's dead.
No, he's brain dead.
Yeah, I just thought that was like a total dick move. It's like, oh my God.
It's like Norm MacDonald on Celebrity Jeopardy as Burt Reynolds. It's funny. It's funny because it's bigger than a normal hat. it's like brain dead.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. That was the one that really got a laugh out of me. I mean, none of like their actual punchlines. It was just as like nonchalant and just like kind of like dismissive attitude. Like, he's brain dead. Whatever.
Yeah. I like that. I like the joke. The joke itself, the line was funny, but I still, for some reason, like the slow peeling of the onion off of that real-life marriage. Like, you know, probably 85 to 90% of the crowd knows that they're still married. But every once in a while, in real life, if you have enough conversations with people about professional wrestling, I have been surprised over the last 5 years how many people have asked, are Triple H and Stephanie really married?
Yeah.
Like, it's cool that they're still, like, kind of teasing it and haven't completely made it obvious.
Yeah.
I mean, I think they kind of tried to do that with the Triple H Orton. Triple H Orton feud from, like, 17 years ago and then 16, 15, and 14, and 10. And the idea. But, you know, it's still in tease mode at this point. Like, they won't show Triple H on TV.
And I don't know, I guess I don't miss him either. It's still not to the point where it's like you're craving, I don't know if it'll ever get to that point, but it doesn't feel like it's to that point where you're ever going to really hope, like, you know, he comes back.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
But, no, so, I mean, that I got a kick out of, so.
Yeah. Otherwise, I don't know, just in summary, Pee Wee Herman was okay. Like, he's funny. And I thought I know you are, but what am I, why don't you marry it, thing was really funny, actually. But, this, like, once again, the comedy writers strike fucking shit. I've been trying that Twister thing backstage in the Mark Henry thing. He was, you know, relatively ineffective as a host, but he was still funny, and I still like the nostalgia of Pee Wee Herman.
Yeah, you know how I am with this nostalgia stuff. It's just...
yeah.
I don't know. It just seems kind of sad to me that he's like in his 50s. You know he doesn't want to be doing this, but he knows it's a way to make easy money.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. So when he was out there, he's like, I know you are, but what am I? I'm like, oh. Yeah. It's the same feeling I got from Cheech and Chong when they did that.
Oh. Yeah.
Any ECW reunion, I get the same thing.
Awesome. A bunch of almost 40-year-old guys who are too pathetic and too oblivious to know any better.
When they had Mike Bellucci dressing up as Supernova,
yeah,
that was one of the saddest things I've seen. It's just, ugh. there's nothing wrong with evolving. And going, I'm not going back to that, even though you want to see me doing that, you know?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Just, I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe the Pee-wee stuff is funny in his shows, but when it came to that big skit, I felt bad for him. So
I did in a way. Like, I was looking at his face carefully, thinking, God, you can see that he's aged. It's not badly.
Yeah.
But you
can
see that he's 20 years older than he was when Pee-wee's Playhouse was on TV.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But I laughed. Yeah. I gotta admit, I laughed at it, mostly because I was a big Pee Wee nerd when I was a kid.
Yeah. I don't know. I felt bad. It's the same thing I get with all these guest hosts. They don't want to be doing this. Like Johnny Knoxville, I think he may not have wanted to do this, but he has the personality to pull it off to where it just seems natural. And then also you're part of the Jackass, so it's like of course you're up for it.
Right.
I don't know. I still think Bob Barker was the only like host that worked the best.
Yeah. I'm biased because I was there live.
All right. Otherwise, what was the third one?
Daniel Bryan, who, as I told you earlier over IM, I said, Daniel Bryan had a good match. It just so happened Ted DiBiase was in the ring punching and kicking.
And this is something I've discussed with Kevin. I don't mind Michael Cole not liking Daniel Bryan. I think that's fine. But it's also time for him to say, you know what, this guy's a nerd. I think this guy's a nerd, and, you know, he's a dweeb, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes, and it's exactly how he needs to put it, but when it comes to being inside that ring, there's no more dangerous guy, or there's no one, you know, he's the real deal once he's in that ring, and you can't take him. All that stuff goes away. You can't take him lightly. Just something like that.
Well, he tried, not to the level that you say that he should, which I agree that he should. He tried when he said, when he gets that label lock on you, it's finished. But that's not enough of a hard sell. You need a harder sell like you're prescribing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like last night, he was like, yeah, all the deals were back there. I said, he's a peeping Tom. And I'm like, well, wait a second. What the – and even – I couldn't tell what Lawler said, but all of a sudden, and Cole goes, what? Like, where did that come from? Or this, I mean, I couldn't tell what Lawler said. But, yeah, but it's just, it's time. He's, all right, it's almost like, despite their booking, Brian's getting over.
Yes.
They give him that horrible entrance music. that's not Flight of the Valkyries, is it?
Yeah, it is.
Oh, it is. Okay. I just couldn't remember the name, and it just kind of popped in my head. But anyway, it's time to get away from that, and it's time to treat him as a legit, like actual WWE guy already. And the first way of going about that is to have Cole, and he kind of said something. He's like, you know, say what you want about Daniel Bryan, but once he locks the label lock on, it's over.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I was like, that's a positive step right there.
Yeah.
That it just needs to be subtle things. But he can still continue to hate on him. He can still continue to call him a nerd, whatever else. But they also need to balance it out and say, this guy is a legit wrestler. He's or sports entertainer, whatever you want to say it.
Right. Like, it was never above or how do I say that? Not above. That might not be the right way to say it. Gorilla Monsoon would never avoid saying something like, Brutus Beefcake looks like a hand grenade went off in his pocket. But at least he touted all of his positives, which, granted, were very few, but he did an excellent job of touting the positives. It's okay for your lead announcer to make a little bit of fun. But and so there's a balance, that Cole needs to strike. Because Daniel Bryan, like we said, McMahon even brought him up. You know, that's practically an endorsement, you know?
Yeah.
You can hear him asking about Rob Conway, or I don't know. I don't even know who's around anymore. You didn't hear him asking about Val Venus, that's for sure.
Ugh. But I think one disservice, and I think what keeps this treatment up, it still seems to me that Daniel Bryan is wrestling in front of a small crowd.
Uh-huh.
I still get that feeling that he's still playing to the first 10 rows instead of the third row from the top of the arena.
Yeah. Hmm. Okay.
He doesn't seem like he's gotten it to get big enough yet in the ring. I mean, and I know it's a bigger man, but just somebody like Kane, he overacts, but he's playing for the back of the crowd.
Right.
Okay, and that's what I think, and I think that just comes with time. That just comes with being in WWE and figuring it out. So
somebody there needs to make him
become more aware of where he is. Because, yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
He's probably, because he's only used to wrestling in front of 500 to 1,000 people, you know. Like Dusty and I, we've always talked about Jerry Lawler. Like you, exactly like you just said, you know, you knew that he was playing to the last row. If you sat in the last row of the Mid-South Coliseum in Memphis, Tennessee, you could have sworn that Jerry Lawler looked you in the eye that night.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Yeah.
So someday Daniel Bryan will come to that point.
Well,
and it'll get him over even bigger than he already is.
Yeah, I mean, he's only been in WWE since SummerSlam, really. And that was about the middle and the August. So it's only been 3 months. So it's like it's not like a total giving up thing, because it's not. So I think that's a fair criticism to make without just, you know, coming down on him. So,
right.
You know. But I think he's got the talent to figure it out, too. So.
Yeah, I think so. He's got the smarts.
Yeah. Yeah, they stumbled on it. I think they signed him just to keep him away from TNA, or they took, like, Shawn Michaels' suggestion, and I think they just stumbled onto it. I don't think they knew what they were getting.
When they did
sign. I really don't.
Yeah.
So.
Well, you know what? Sometimes those work out for the best.
Yeah.
Miz was the other guy on my list, and we've already kind of talked about him in regards to Pee Wee. You know, it's too bad he got stuck in there against Big Show, but as usual, Miz makes the most out of the mic time he's given.
Yeah.
I don't know what more needs to be said.
Well, I don't think Miz is going to be a top heel. Now, what I mean is, Roddy Piper, he reminds me of the Roddy Piper type.
Okay.
If he was loosened up a little bit.
Yeah.
And there's that famous, I think it's WrestleMania 1, that famous, like, video of Piper walking down the aisle, and he's just doing a swagger.
Oh, yeah, and the crowd's all, like, reaching out for him and throwing trash at him.
Yeah, and he's just like, yeah, whatever. That's what the Miz needs to become. Now, I know he's doing a swarmy act right now, and I don't like you. I never liked you. I think there's enough room for him to turn. I mean, and I'm not saying he's not entertaining, because I still think he's. I mean, for someone, you know, from what I consider ourselves smart marks, whatever, he's still one of those. He's still kind of a polarizing guy, to where you're like, you know, you really don't like him.
Yeah.
And I think that's to his credit, of course. But he needs a little bit of swarm to him.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and once he hits that, I still don't think he's like a championship caliber. If you want, like, he'll be one of those guys that contends for the title but never win. So I do think he's going to be the first guy that fails on the Money in the Bank, too.
Oh, man. That would suck. But you know what? Hey, the same thing. Triple H lost the King of the Ring tournament in 96 or whatever. He got the boot, and it worked out for him, too. I could see them setting up Miz to fail or giving him enough rope or whatever, and still, you know, coming back from it.
Yeah.
And to further your Roddy Piper point, I think Miz is doing an excellent, excellent job. I still think it's the littlest, tiniest bit too polished. Like, it's coming off really well,
but
not 100% natural.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think, I wonder if part of it is because they have Miz out on the road doing all these personal appearances.
Roddy
Piper in 1985 would have never done those personal appearances.
Yeah, he would have been at the Jeff Hardy kid just going, what's with this fucking cripple?
Throwing and tipping his chair upside down.
Flattening the tires. knowing they're like solid rubber, he just takes them and cuts them off so they're squares.
That's right, yes.
He's doing
so,
Fred.
Yeah. Pedal with your feet. Oh, can't do it.
He just puts a giant slab of ribs on the guy's chair and he falls over. He can't blow into the straw for help.
Oh, my God. On that note, I'm going to go ahead and sign out. I think that's all that you said for this.
I can sign out.
Maybe I have to go. Okay, no, seriously, I think it might actually be time to sign off. We've come full circle, or full square.
Get it?
he can't control anything. So we have to use a little straw.
Oh,
yeah,
God.
Right. All right.
This is the last straw. Okay.
Oh, boo.
Hey, do you want the last word or do you want me to have it?
No, I think I've ruined the end of this. That's fine.
Okay.
So.
Well, in that case, I'll just take care of everything then. For the Miz and Rocky, paraplegics all across the country and fucking anywhere in your neck of the woods. For Jeremy Mays, this is Eric Nelson. This has been a very special edition of Stunt Granny Audio. So we'll try to do better next time.